This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guests are Matthew Perry and Harris Goldberg, who wrote and directed the new film that Perry is starring in. It's called Numb, and it's playing this week at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York. Perry is, of course, best known for his starring role on Friends and more recently Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip. In the new film Numb, he plays a screenwriter who's having a breakdown and can no longer function in his professional or personal life. Maybe it's the marijuana he smoked, but he feels removed from the world, even from his own body. And after the marijuana wears off, the numbness does not. He tries several therapies and is diagnosed with depersonalization syndrome. The movie is based on a period in Goldberg's life. The film is a departure for Goldberg. He's best known for writing the 1999 Rob Schneider comedy Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. Here's a scene from Numb, in which the screenwriter, played by Matthew Perry, has finally met a woman he cares about, yet it's still hard for him to feel anything. He's afraid to explain his problem to her. He decides he needs help and gets therapy. This scene starts with a voiceover.
I couldn't hide my condition from her forever. If I had any chance with Sarah, I had to speed up my recovery. So I went with another doctor who specialized in a big word, which meant talking, take drugs.
So, Dr.
Richmond.
Richmond, here's the thing. I have met and I think fallen in love with the most beautiful, incredible, weird woman on the face of the planet. She's so pretty. She thinks she has a big head, but she doesn't. And last night we consummated our relationship, which is to say that I had sex. Well, we had sex, and it should have felt really good. I mean, it should have felt really good. But I was so focused on her not seeing the pen that I stole, which she saw me steal, but I told her that I returned it, but I didn't return it. I just stole another pen. So all that was flying through my brain when I was supposed to so f***ing help.
Matthew Perry, Harris Goldberg, welcome to Fresh Air. Harris, let me start with you. What is depersonalization, which is the condition that your character has in the movie?
Well, it's kind of an offshoot of anxiety. It's sort of in that realm. And really what it is it's a sort of a chronic state of feeling like you're watching yourself in a movie and everything around you. It's like this sort of dreamlike state, and it's a pretty uncomfortable feeling, and it's like there's anxiety and then there's panic attacks, and this is kind of like one step above it. And what they know so far is that it's kind of a defense mechanism from too much stress that you're receiving. And, you know, some people, I think, are vulnerable to it and have that sort of, you know, aspect inside themselves that if they're stressed too much, they can get it. But they really don't know that much about it, and it's just starting to really open up where people there's more people that are suffering from it than you know, you can really imagine. It's kind of mind-boggling. So,
did you have it?
Yes, very much so for a long time, and that's what made me, write the movie in the first place.
Matthew Perry, why did you want to star in Numb, which is about a writer who has this kind of detachment from reality through this anxiety syndrome?
Well, for me personally, I had just taken some time off because Friends had come to an end, and I was very lucky to be able to not have to work for a while. And I read this script, and I related to a lot of it in my own life. This character's isolation and this character's fear and his kind of desperate attempt to improve his life on a daily basis, I completely related to. So I read the script, and then I had a meeting with Harris a couple of days later, and we just talked about what he had gone through and what this character goes through. And I thought it was just an excellent opportunity for me to really do something different. There was less pressure to be funny, although there is comedy in the movie. But it was this guy's desperate struggle to improve his life, and I really related to it. The character holed himself up in his house for weeks at a time. I've done that in the past, and I just thought it was an excellent opportunity to do something different for me. And I was also moved by the story. So,
you know, one of the things that most people hope to achieve by fame is desirability, that everybody will want to spend time with you. You can go to the best dinners or parties, and have your choice of partners or whatever. And you're talking about identifying with the isolation that the character feels and identifying with, like, holding yourself up for weeks, you know, at home. What made you want to isolate yourself, or what made you feel isolated? Because I'm assuming you're referring to a time when you were well-known and could have been, you know, in a very social world.
I would like to say at this point that I feel that I am still very well-known.
Yes.
No, I'm just kidding. No. What I was talking about was I think dealing with friends. I got that show when I was 24 years old, and the kind of the white hot flame of fame at that point was pretty disillusioning to me. At first, it was kind of everything I'd ever wanted, and I was getting all this attention, and it was wonderful. But then I kind of realized that it wasn't real, and that it was sort of this existed in this, you know, kind of ether, and it became kind of scary to me. So I spent a lot of time, you know, at home watching TV during that time and just not wanting to deal with reality. And that's really what I related to most in this story.
What was scary?
Just that the world kind of changed overnight, and doors that were, you know, closed were now open, and creatively that was good. But it just, you know, if you're fortunate enough or unfortunate enough to be in a situation that becomes that huge overnight, just the entire world changing is scary in and of itself.
Now, Harris Goldberg, you wrote Deuce Bigalow, Male Gigolo, which I confess I haven't seen. But my impression is it's not among the most introspective of comedic movies. And it's probably not about someone who's really trapped in his head. So when you became the kind of person who is really trapped in his head and who felt really isolated from, you know, separated from the physical world, did you feel like your whole sense of what your material ought to be changed too? Could you not even identify with the kind of writing that you'd been doing?
No, actually, a lot of those movies I wrote during this entire state. But I was just, you know, I'd come from a comedy writing background. You know, as I said, my older brother had written Stripes and Meatballs, and I grew up with the whole Second City thing in Toronto. So when I got here, I sort of, you know, hit Fast and Furious with sort of this broader kind of comedy thing, which I never really liked, to be honest with you, but I was just good at it. I don't know why, but it was just sort of, you didn't have to think that much. And it was scary to kind of write things that were more personal and stuff. So I wrote all those movies during those years, but I just got to a point where I just couldn't do it anymore. I just didn't want to write something that just didn't mean anything to me. So I really just sat down to write this for me. I didn't think anything would happen to it, but it just felt good. It was very cathartic, and it felt like the words were, I was finally writing words that I really wanted to write, and I was relating to what I wanted to write and the feelings, you know, of what was going on. So when I met with Matthew, you know, I was always a big fan of Matthew. But I just had this gut feeling that there was this side to him that was so underrated and not even touched that it was a huge opportunity for me. And when I met him and we had a fairly lengthy conversation, I realized this was the guy.
Just another question about what you were writing. It just seems to me like if you were living in this nightmare dream state, which is how you describe your anxiety condition, then how do you get to the point where you can even write comedy?
Well, it actually got so bad that I would sometimes go to the beach, Malibu Beach, and I would lie on the sand, just staring up at the sky, and I would just dictate the script to somebody who would write notes down, and then I'd go and transcribe it. That's how bad it got. And I think I was doing this film called Without a Paddle at the time, which was a Paramount film that did very well, but I can't even remember writing two lines of it. Comedy is like a defense mechanism for me, and it has always been. I was always sort of the class clown. It's a very, you sort of follow these patterns that you have these bag of tricks that you can kind of go back to over and over again, which are kind of these rhythms that you know will make people laugh, that you know that people will like you if you get into that realm. And it's sort of a secure place to be. And to break out of that and not do that is very, very difficult. And so I just did that for a long time because I was good at it, and that's what everyone expected of me. So, you know, those are the kind of projects the studios wanted me to do. and it worked for a long time, and they still want me to do it, quite frankly. But I'm hoping this movie will facilitate me doing some other things that are a little deeper, you know.
Matthew Perry, unlike Harris Goldberg, you were a really well-known public figure when you'd go through periods of isolation or whatever, and you also went through a period of being in rehab and so on, and that was written up in the press. So it must be really hard to go through periods like that when you're living, you know, under the microscope.
It must be hard to go through periods of like that when I'm living under the microscope. Yes, of course it was. Yes, I have, unfortunately, a rather well-documented history with having to deal with certain issues in my life on the public level. I've managed to kind of turn that around, though, for me, where it gives me much more of an opportunity now to help other people who are going through similar struggles.
Mm-hmm.
It also made it impossible for me to just go to a bar and have a drink, because if you're on the cover of People magazine in rehab, you're going to turn some heads. So I turned it into a positive. But all of that stuff is what helped me relate to this character and this movie.
Yeah, yeah. In what ways? What could you draw on from your own experiences to help you understand what the character was going through?
Well, drugs do play a factor in this movie, and as we touched on earlier, the isolation and just sort of when you're going through what, as Harris describes, what he was going through, or as what I have described what I was going through, there tends to be a dynamic that falsely enters your brain that tells you that there's kind of a universe in play and you. And when you think that way and you don't really have the courage to stop that line of thinking, it leads to, you know, serious isolation and serious problems in your life.
The movie that we're talking about is Numb, and it's a movie about a comedy writer with an anxiety disorder starring Matthew Perry and written and directed by Harris Goldberg. And Harris, thanks for talking with us about the movie. And Matthew Perry, if you don't mind, I'd like to keep you a little longer and talk with you about other aspects of your life and career, other movies and TV shows and so on.
Sure.
And Matthew Perry is starring in the movie Numb, which was written and directed by Harris Goldberg and is playing this week at the Tribeca Film Festival. My guest is Matthew Perry, and he's starring in the new film, Numb. He became famous for his role as Chandler on Friends. Here's a scene from Friends. Joey has just given Chandler a kind of tacky gold friendship bracelet. Chandler is wearing it when he's in the coffee shop trying to pick up a girl, but she leaves when she sees the bracelet. Here he is talking with Phoebe.
Oh, this is excellent. You know, he could have got me a VCR, he could have got me a set of golf clubs, but no, he has to get me the woman repeller. The eyesore from the Liberace House of Crap.
Not that bad.
Oh, yeah, easy for you to say. You don't have to walk around sporting some reject from the Mr. T collection.
Chandler.
I pity the fool who puts on my jewelry. I do.
Before you got the part of Friends, did you do verbal witty parts? Was that the kind of role that you saw yourself as getting?
Before Friends, I was auditioning for everything, and what I would find the parts that I was getting was sitcom auditions and people that were at least trying to be funny, and I think that's largely due to growing up in Canada around a bunch of kind of goofy, funny people, and I just learned all these kind of comedic rhythms to make kids laugh or make girls laugh in school, and I would use those in my auditions, and kind of 9 times out of 10 early on, I would get these little sitcom auditions that I would go out for. And at the time, it was important to me to be on TV, and I thought it was, you know, a fun job. So that's certainly how it started. I mean, comedy came easier to me than drama, than the stuff that I'm playing out in the movie Numb, which is a little bit harder for me to do.
I've read that when you auditioned for Friends, you actually weren't going to audition because you were tied up with another pilot, but you ended up auditioning and you already knew the lines because you had so many friends who were auditioning for the part that you eventually got. What was it like for you to audition for the part, having heard friends of yours do it in their way? Like you'd already heard so many versions of the character.
Well, that was a very interesting time because I you know, had for years been doing the kind of jobs we were talking about, and was off the market because I'd done another pilot that year just for the money. The pilot was about baggage handlers in the year 2194 at the LAX airport, and needless to say, it wasn't very good because it was.
Could have been more dynamic after September 11th, right?
Yeah, yes,
could have been
exactly.
A thriller.
But it was about futuristic baggage handlers, but what that did was it rendered me off the market for that pilot season, and then all of a sudden this wonderful script at the time called Friends Like Us came around, and it just had a part in it that leapt off the page as something that was very similar to me and had my rhythms, and it was about a guy who. Was sort of trying to distract everybody from how miserable he was all the time by being funny. And so a lot of my friends, comedic out-of-work actors tend to gravitate towards one another, and we would have lunch and hang out all the time. And this part came around, and a lot of people saw that it was sort of similar to me, and because I was off the market, they had asked me to run the scene with them and help them with their auditions. And finally, after the fourth person did, I just said, "Well, listen, I think I've got a really good line on this character. Why don't you let me just do this scene for you and just take any choices that you like?" And a couple of guys I did that for, and they did very well on those choices and got to network and got to the final levels. And I was, a little disappointed, of course, because I thought that the show was going to be good and I couldn't be on it. And then what ended up happening was, some of the powers that be at the network and the studio saw the pilot that I did, the futuristic baggage handler show, and decided it probably wasn't going to get picked up. So I got a phone call from my agent saying, you have an audition for the show on Wednesday. And at that point, when I got that phone call, I knew, and I've never felt that way before in my life and probably never will again, I knew that I was going to get the job. I knew that it was going to change my life just even before I went in to read for it.
Now, how did you get the part in Studio 60, which is in hiatus now, hoping it comes back? And on that you play, this is there's two TV shows that recently premiered that are kind of like backstage at Saturday Night Live kind of shows. There's the comic one, and then Studio 60 is more of a drama done by, written by Aaron Sorkin, who did The West Wing, which you had a part on for one of the arcs. How did you end up playing the head writer on the show in Studio 60?
I had little or no interest in returning to television because my theory at the time was I'd already been fortunate enough to be on one of the better shows, so why go back? And I just completed this TNT movie that we shot in Canada called The Ron Clark Story, and I was in my hotel, and my manager called and said that Aaron Sorkin had written a pilot about backstage at a Saturday Night Live type show. And I just immediately wanted to get my hands on it, and they emailed the script to me. And at about 2 o'clock in the morning in the business center of one of these hotels, I just read it on the computer. And by the time I had finished it, I thought to myself, oh boy, I guess I'm going to have to do another television show. Because the character was so great and the writing was so wonderful that so I emailed Aaron Sorkin. I got a hold of his email address and just let him know that I'd read the script. I thought it was wonderful, and the character of Matt, the writer, had spoken to me, and he emailed me the next day and said, well, I'm glad it spoke to you because I wrote it for you. And it kind of went on from there.
After years of playing Chandler on Friends, do you feel like the writing rubbed off on you? Like, you were already witty, I'm sure, but do you feel like you became even more witty because you were doing these great lines for years?
I suppose so. I mean, it really was sort of the perfect marriage with that whole thing just had like a magic dust on it. I mean, it was the greatest director at the time and just the wonderful writers, and they got a great cast. And it just came very naturally to me, and it kind of fed off each other. I would come up with lines, they would come up with lines, and it just was exactly, it was sort of like, just a slightly funnier version of my real life because they had, I had writing writers for me on Friends, but I would say it certainly did. We did feed off each other, and this was a very interesting, funny character. So you know, you learn those rhythms, and I had a lot of those rhythms going in, so they worked off that too.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Matthew Perry. He's starring in the new film Numb. He's a star of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, which is currently in hiatus. He plays the head writer of a network sketch comedy show, kind of like Saturday Night Live. Here's a scene from the pilot of Studio 60. Perry is at an award ceremony, seated at a table. He falls off his chair.
Whoa! Sorry. That was strange. I'm sorry.
You okay?
Yeah. I'm on some medication right now that I guess makes me not know where chairs are.
He means he's on back medication.
Yeah.
How'd you hurt your back?
It happened when a surgeon sliced it open with a knife.
He had back surgery a few days ago.
You're on Vicodin?
Yeah. I may have exceeded the recommended dosage.
Should you be out of bed this soon?
I play with pain.
Well, they haven't gotten to your category yet. They're doing the awards between courses this year.
Where's your wife?
Sitting right next to her husband. I was just talking to you.
Sure. I'm on a little Vicodin and some Percocet and a steroid called Nortisone, side effect of which is mania. I swear to God, it says so right on the bottle.
You're here alone?
Completely alone.
Studio 60 was created by Aaron Sorkin, who also created The West Wing. I asked Matthew Perry if Sorkin wrote Perry's Studio 60 part to show off Perry's verbal facility and cynicism.
Yeah, I think so. I think I think in that character, and now I know in that character, he was trying to write himself. And Aaron Sorkin is one of the biggest freaky Friends fans in the world. It just happens to be that he's seen every episode like 15 times, and he, you know, I guess was a fan of my work on that show. And then when I came to do The West Wing, which was a much more toned down version, a much more dramatic performance than what I had done on Friends. So, you know, for whatever reason, he had written the part for me. And the guy is slightly cynical. He's messed up. He's dark. He's a genius. He's all the things that that Aaron Sorkin is. And what the show, as these things tend to happen over the last year, the show is that character has become sort of a combination of Aaron and myself.
Yeah, and one of the things that you guys have in common, in addition to being like smart and maybe a little cynical and funny and all that, you also have like a period of like drug problems in your background, as does your character. And I wonder if that kind of helps link you to the character and to each other.
I think so. The character in the pilot was on Vicodin because of back surgery, and that obviously leapt off the page for me, because I thought it, you know, afforded him to be a little freer and a little crazier in the pilot and a little darker. So, you know, I've had my history with that, and he's had his history as well. They're both very separate histories, but, you know, they both, you know, there's a lot of that darkness in Hollywood. There's a lot of that kind of history in writing rooms all over the place. So, you know, that just added to my interest in the project, that's for sure.
Do you have a favorite scene from Studio 60 so far?
A favorite scene from Studio 60? Well, I mean, I think my favorite, just personally, my favorite episodes have been the pilot, and then we did a Christmas episode that I really liked, and then there was another episode where Matt Albee, my character, starts to take Vicodin and starts to remember when he first came to Studio 60, an episode called The Friday Night Slaughter that just personally means a lot to me.
Do you remember the first time you saw yourself on film or on video, and how that jived or didn't jive with your self-image of yourself?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, a lot of actors don't watch their own stuff, and a lot of actors watch a lot of it, and I'm probably somewhere in the middle. I mean, at first, as a young actor, when I was 16 or 17, I couldn't get enough of it. It was just, you know, it was just so much fun to be able to see my work on television. And now I'm less apt to watch it, because I still sort of watch it with that juvenile kind of I, you know, I could be doing the most important scene in the world and I'm more concerned about what my hair looks like or, you know, what I'm wearing. So it's a very bizarre profession us actors have put ourselves into because, you know, you can see it, you know. It's like in other professions you're kind of submitting your work and it's on a piece of paper and people either like it or not, but it's your work. This is, it's you.
Did you look like you expected to? Were you surprised at seeing yourself the way other people see you?
Did I look like I expected myself to look? Because
mirrors are different than cameras.
They are. You know, I think I probably looked like I thought I was going to look, but it, you know, it's what's going on in my head that's the problem. It's like, as I said, I'm like pointing, like I'll look immediately at the at what I think are the bad things before the good. Mm-hmm, that's why I try not to watch it too often.
Now, I know when you were growing up, your father did Old Spice ads. And for anybody who doesn't know or remember Old Spice, it was a kind of like aftershave and cologne. It was really, really popular in the 60s and I think in the 70s, too. So your father was the guy who did the commercials on TV for Old Spice?
Yeah, that's actually led to most of my problems because my father is the handsomest man in the world. So that's led to why I look at myself on TV in the first place and also why I immediately go to the problems. But yeah, that was my, you know, a lot of you guys probably remember the, you know, there was that Old Spice commercial where the sailor has like a tote bag and he's whistling and all the women are,
right.
You know,
so was it a lesson in what show business was like to have a father who was famous from commercials?
Well, it was an interesting lesson on all fronts to have a father in this business because I got to see the highs and lows because he would, you know, he would have one year that was just off the charts successful and then he would have a year that wasn't. And, you know, he's one of those actors that have, you know, managed to work for 40 years in this business. And, you know, I saw a lot of the highs and lows. I would see, like, him go out for pilots and either get them or not and, you know, what that kind of does to your attitude on a daily basis. So, you know, his big lesson to me was to make sure that there's something else in your life that is more important than acting or you'll go bananas. And so I've tried to follow that, and I know that he feels that way too.
So your mother was the press secretary to Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau. So one parent is exposing you to, like, you know, Hollywood, and the other to politics. What was your impression of the political world growing up?
Well, I was absolutely fascinated by it. And she was around during, you know, Jean Chrétien's liberal leadership campaign. And I was right there as a, you know, 12-year-old kid just watching all of that happen and watching, you know, all those campaigns. And it was just fascinating. And, you know, it was bizarre because my mother was sort of in the public eye when I was a kid as well, just from a completely different arena. But, you know, I was fascinated by it as a kid and watching all these people gather together and celebrate all these politicians. It was really fun.
Did you see her on TV a lot? Did she have to make a lot of public statements?
I did. I saw her on TV a lot, you know, especially during the campaigns and stuff because she was always kind of, you know, around. So it was really an interesting time.
So you grew up in an environment where the people who you knew best, your parents, we're on TV a lot, so I guess, yeah. Did that make it any more or less of a big deal to be on TV yourself?
Well, the most interesting thing was, you know, I grew up in Canada, in Ottawa, Canada, and, you know, with my mom, and the way that I would see my father on a regular basis was on TV. He would call me up and say, you know, I'm doing an episode of Mannix or I'm doing an episode of this, and that's the way I got to kind of see my dad. So I really think I generated a huge respect for television and for the industry because of that.
Well, I want to thank you so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you. This was really fun.
Matthew Perry. He's starring in the new film Numb, which is playing this week at the Tribeca Film Festival. Coming up, Sarah Polley talks about directing the new film Away From Her. This is Fresh Air.